Good afternoon.
Hey.
Oh, look. Is this real? This is real. Cool. The first thing that I should do, so there's a beautiful thing, is to welcome all. Thank you very much for coming. I see great faces, and I feel very much above you all. I think I'll just revel for a moment. But someone that really does belong to be above us all is Brandon Ryan from Roland. I'll call him up. We're going to talk a little bit, and then we're going to talk about this stuff, brand new Rain DJ equipment, and Jamie Simmons, who I can't see at all because he's behind the light, is going to come and show how it can be done. Colin Eisler from Rain is going to tell us about some of the hardware. So that's what our process is going to be, is we're going to introduce things. First, we're going to start with philosophy, and then we're going to show... Yeah, so how are you doing for your...
I'm good. Do I sound okay?
Give Brandon a hand.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.
You're good.
Thank you.
Okay, so...
Can I introduce myself? Can I say that?
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I am, I started when I was just a wee child playing synthesizers. Now, I would tape together tape decks and microphones and tried to make workstations that didn't exist. Do you guys remember a company called Digital Audio Labs? They made a thing called the Card D Plus. So I worked with those guys early on. We made a thing called the V8 system that was really awesome but didn't do so well.
I had a Card D.
Yeah,
loved it. Had the poly caps and everything.
That was an awesome sounding card. So, did that, and I've worked at Tascam, worked at Cakewalk for 10 years. Then Roland bought Cakewalk. I was a refugee from there, and I've been with Roland on the books for 15 years, but 5 years directly with them. So, and lots of other.
What's your new title, Brandon?
My title is, I can't even remember it. It's Global Strategic Product Marketing Manager for High Tech Products, yeah. I think. So something like that. So I've worked very long for a lofty title such as this.
I hope your check reflects
it. Kind of does. It's still the MI industry, though, yeah. And I've known Steve for a long time. I always say smartest person I know. Those of you who know him.
I never hear that, so this is... I'll pay you back.
Here. So I've been into DAWs my whole life, but I mean my love is I'm a piano player and synthesis and play guitar and record and play whatever instruments people let me as long as they don't have reeds.
So I'm a mastering engineer and a circuit board designer and a musician, I guess.
You are totally a musician.
Okay, so we've got this thing called the Players Lounge. That has improv. It's been going since 2014. We just got together with their band called the Bats of Ballard and did our 46th album on Monday. And it's got like Amy DeNio's in there and a few other, a lot of Guitar Craft people. And it's pretty exciting. And what it's done is sort of gotten the focus on performance back. Because one of the things when we're down at NAMM, we sort of, you know how sleepovers are. You get a chance to talk about,
campfire
chat. Yeah, Stephen Colbert does his thing, yeah. Under the Stars, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when we get together.
Right.
And we were talking, I planned this meeting last summer before these two companies knew each other because there's a necessity. And what we figured out is that we've fallen into sort of a problem in the audio industry in that all of our focus has been put into the tape recorder. Mm-hmm. Into the recorder, and it turned into the DAW, and it went away from the actual performance. So now, Roland Cloud makes these VST instruments that the first thing you have to do is find something that looks like a tape recorder and learn it enough to instantiate a track and be able to put a thing on as if you're going to record it, rather than just playing it.
Yeah, the instruments became a pull-down menu, right? That's pretty much what instruments, which were the nexus of why you would want to record something, seem to have been relegated to just a pull-down menu within a recording system.
Instead of under your fingers, right. Where they belong, and the performance. So recording should come second. I mean, we were always used to jam in a room, right? And you don't have to set up a recorder. Now, the nice thing about Gig Performer, so Gig Performer is a VST host, and David designed it. He's in a band called The Security Project, with Jerry Murata on drums and Trey Gunn and Michael Kotze, who might not be here today. Okay, but Jerry Murata was Peter Gabriel's original drummer. And they do their tribute album for like the first five or six Peter Gabriel albums.
Four
or so. Anyway, the good ones. Yeah. So it's amazing to see them. But when David was going out, he's a keyboard player, so when he was out on tour, he had some issues with how do I make a performance interface that can keep up with me. Correct me if I'm wrong. So he made Gig Performer as a performance side, and then Roland Cloud came from a composition side. So they're thinking, you know, and peanut butter and chocolate. I don't know if you've heard the story before. It's a Reese's reference. But what happened was, in my studio in my basement, I have a lot of stuff, a ton of MIDI, a lot of things, but it's very, I don't want to get into the DAW. I can't get, you know, you got to just all this technical crap before you can even start playing. So when Gig Performer came to me, I go, wow, excellent. A studio configuration tool. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that it has is, and that it comes up to originally, is you've got these racks, which I don't use really. Each of these are rack spaces. And I use the stuff in the back. So here's my MIDI in, for instance. It comes from here. Yay, it works. Here's my audio in. You've got all of these audio pieces. You can grab audio and turn, you know, make it do stuff. And then here's a very nice, actually, IK multimedia instrument, VST instrument. Yay, here we go. And this, it has, I'll just jump into the types of things that you get. So SY99 kind of thing, PPG Wave, Moog Taurus pedal, JX10. So they emulate, like here's an Andromeda and a 2600. There's all of this stuff, which is so cool. And they also have like a 500 rack here with tons of, like let's go to the delays and a digital delay now. And we can go, there's that. And if we go into here, now it's all of that. And it gives you four layers that you can set by key splits or velocity. So you can have low velocity to high velocity for all these different things. This is one of those instruments, and I'm showing other than Roland things, that I wanted to have access to. And this allows also, for instance, with these the audio input, I can take channels 5 and 6, take my guitar rig in, go through VST plugins, and then come out 5 and 6 and go into the guitar amp. And I can take channel 3 and take my bass into it, go through VST plugins or not, go out channel 3 into the bass. So I can configure my studio. At a moment's notice, save it, configure a different studio. This is exciting for me.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, I mean, there's so little recall in a lot of DAWs. I mean, they've matured to a point where there's things like track templates and, you know, some of the DAWs have where you can kind of set up multi-instruments. But they're really kind of like, I drag in one instrument, I can play that instrument, I can record it. But doing things like you would do on workstation keyboards where you can do splits and layers and have effects and save everything that way, that's really kind of difficult to do. In a lot of DAWs, because again, they come from their recorders. Ultimately, they're recorders and mixers.
And the learning curves are different for each one.
That's
so
true.
If you're great at Logic, maybe you're not great at Studio One or Pro Two. You know, you
well, even look at the way you instantiate plugins in a lot of DAWs. Some of them have nice drag and drops. Some you go through an insert and a channel, and it seems so bizarre. It's not very musical. So Gig Performer really does kind of, I think, address that very nicely and allows you to mix your instruments and do what you would do if they were actual hardware pieces.
And Brandon just found out about Gig Performer at NAMM. So
yeah.
This is...
Ignorant.
I told these guys, I said, you really need this. Because one of the things, we'll talk about Roland Cloud a little bit, is Roland Cloud is a subscription service.
Can you switch over to my...
I can. Will. Let's go.
Yeah, so first of all... Is anybody not familiar with Roland? Okay, so you're all familiar with Roland. All right. So I'm sometimes people are like, I've heard of that before. So, you know, Roland has about a 46-year history of synthesizers and drum machines. They have TR-808, 909, 303, all Jupiter 8, the Juno, all these classic instruments. And many of them are very expensive. So a little plastic TB-303 will run you $4,000 on eBay. It's a monophonic bass synthesizer that was designed for organists, and now it's $4,000 because it spawned Acid House and whole cultural movements, and kind of can't be overstated. And then the 808, we all know that the 808 is
it has changed.
Yeah, it has its own documentary film. Yeah. People have written albums about it. Name dropped it 1,000 times. And the whole time I was here on the plane here, a girl next to me was leaking out 808 hi-hats out of her earbuds the entire time, which I was annoyed by, but then felt there was a sad irony that I was wearing a TR-808 shirt. And I realized that we had done this to the world. And, you know, whenever you hear a car going through your neighborhood with the low bass, thanks, Roland, we did that too. So anyway, but these things are, these very coveted, expensive instruments. Jupiter 8s, broken, are probably like $8,000, you know, if you can, for parts. Anyway, so we... Finally, technology got to a point where we could start to virtualize these instruments, and not just sort of, you know, some loose simulation, but an actual circuit model of these instruments, because a lot of them have bizarre quirks. Some of them, when you turn a knob that has nothing to do with the sound, it still affects it. And for instance, TR-909s, when a hand clap and a snare would happen together, they would smear because they used the same noise circuit versus samples that would be a distinct clap and a distinct snare. So there's all these weird things that are what people really love about them. But in order to do that, you can't sample it. You really have to circuit model it. So we came up with this technology called analog circuit behavior, where literally model the individual circuits. I'll try not to monologue too long. But one of the great stories was when they gave one of the engineers and said, here, build this circuit in this new modeling software we have. And they didn't know what it was, and they started building it and building it, and turned it on, and went, oh, it's an 808 kick drum. So it's down to that level. I kind of look at them like weather models, but you guys understand circuit modeling. So it uses a lot of DSP. We've actually made it such that it can, some of these can actually run in hardware as well. So you can actually send a plugin into a piece of hardware like this that can host up to three of these really detailed circuit models. Anyway, that brings us to Roland Cloud. So as we started creating these instruments with Roland Virtual Sonics, we created the thing called Roland Cloud. And what that is a subscription service for a whole history of Roland keyboards, so Andro machines. So everything from really rare things like the Pro Mars, which I'll show you, the SH-101, the Jupiter 8, the Juno 106, soon to be the 808, 909, D50s, a whole, you know, 40 years of history is there. And it's all a subscription service for around $19.95 a month. And about, you know, after a year, you get to pick one to keep forever. And there's a whole lot of benefits to this, and that you can kind of get in and see what instruments speak to you, which ones you'd like to use without going out and trying to buy all these things. Plus, you get all the updates and everything that happens along the way. Kind of Netflix for Roland historic synthesizers, if you will. So anyway, and just showing you kind of the flipping down the catalog, but I'll actually show these to you. Cool thing is, too, there is a cloud manager that kind of handles all these synths. So when you get updates, any of you use Creative Cloud, kind of similar. Let me actually just bring it up real quickly if I can see. So this is, we'll go to my instruments. I'm not trying to do this from the side. So you can see all these things, the System 1 and the System 8. Interesting, this whole piece of hardware here, this is about, what do these run, $1,500. This is in software as well, so it's exactly the same as this keyboard, also runs in software, so you can run as many instances as you like. The System 1, there are a whole bunch of other, these anthology instruments are sort of a slice of time of a whole bunch of Roland instruments. They're much more lightweight than the circuit models, but sound great. And these go, you know, orchestra and many, many, many. There's the Flavor series. We'll get into some of this as much as we have time for. And then things that you might have heard of, the D50, the Juno 106, the Jupiter, the JV-1080, SH-2, Sound Canvas. Everybody wants a Sound Canvas, right? And then Terra Guitar and Terra Piano, which are these deep sampled acoustic instruments, which I think Scott is going to show you Terra Guitar.
We'll be hearing more about that.
Yeah, in a little bit. So, anyway... the beauty of this is you have all these instruments, but what do you do with them? And that's what Steve is alluding to, is that Gig Performer is a perfect environment for these, because you have an entire history of museum of Roland hardware, but then what do you do with it? And in Gig Performer, you can configure these things. Anybody remember like Rebirth? It was like a 909, a 303, and you can create that in here. But now you're doing it with modern circuit modeled official Roland instruments, and they sound great. And then you can run through effects and kind of create these sort of playgrounds, you know, which you can perform with that load instantly. And what I've been so impressed with is as I flip through rack spaces, it just the old instrument turns on, the new ones are all off.
You want to turn on?
Yeah, sure. So let's take.
Away here at all, or we...
So let's take, for instance, here's a JV1080. So I'm just gonna. So anybody ever own a JV1080? This was like a a few of you, right? So this had like a lot of the these sounds that you heard. And then things like the where's the acoustic nylon guitar? There was the ones that ended up in so many.
And all the patches with all these things, like all the different extra cards on the D50, they're all in here.
And the orchestra. I don't know where some of these things are, but you know, some of these sounds turned out to be. Is that one? I should have seen nothing like preparing for something.
108.
Which one? 108. Where is it? Okay, so. This one was like, you know, didn't really kind of acoustic guitar-esque, but this became so popular in like R&B music and hip hop and stuff, where actually that became a sound. Much like the 808 was supposed to be real drums. The first review I think said it sounded like marching anteaters, and it kind of did until Arthur Baker and Soul Sonic Force then went, oh wow, look what the kick drum does, and then that became a sound. So those are in here. So I've got this JV1080. And then as soon as I flip to the D50, now I've got it. Have you heard that sound before? The D50 is here, every soundtrack on earth, I think. The classic Fantasia. And then
my D50 has.
And it does this. This blew people away when it came out because it actually had effects and stuff. That was, people were like, oh my god, how does it do that? This is when people hated analog synthesizers for some reason. For the 30th anniversary, we released the D50 plugin with all the original sounds. Sounds exactly like a D50. You can even import D50 SysX into it. But the beauty now is you can run 12 of them if you want. Layer
I had
them,
a physical
stack them.
D50 in my studio and this one, and tested together, they're exactly the same. Because they're exactly the same.
Well, even the Juno 106, which is an analog synthesizer, when we were testing it, people would come into this conference room, and we had a real Juno 106 there, and it would be playing the plug-in, and then people would walk in and go, ah, see, analog. That's what a Juno 106 sounds like. And I'm like, do I tell them that it's the plug-in or not? And in fact, and speaking of the Juno 106, if I, I'll bring it up real quick in this rack. Wow. You hear the noise that just came in? The swishy noise? Yeah, that's the Juno 106 chorus, which is integral to its sound. But at the time, they had to cut costs, make it as cheap as possible, so it was noisy. So... chorus is very noisy. You can actually double up the chorus. I think you can play the two different kinds of choruses. So we even modeled the noise in the chorus and these things. But I find it interesting as I switch a rack, you'll hear, goes away, switches to a D50, back to the Juno 106 again. So, and it, you know, looks like a Juno 106.
You can change the size.
Yeah, you can change the size. And this plug out button, that's what actually sends it into the hardware. So if I want to go play live or I want to augment what's in Gig Performer, I can also play local, like hardware, DSP-based versions of the synthesizers as well. And some cool things, just as long as I got this patch up, one of the great things about Gig Performer is the way you can set up your knobs and everything. So I have, I've got... filters right here, or now on the bottom, I've actually got a SH-101. So this is the SH-101 down here. bass on a bazillion techno and electronic sound songs. But what's cool, I also have a couple of knobs here. So I can control the filter on that, and then while I'm up here. So I've got filters for the Juno, filters for the SH. So two synthesizers, split both circuit models with knobs to control both of them at the same time, and I can just bring that up as a patch.
Show the front rack and show the edit mode, please.
What are you talking about? No, okay. So, what's the front
the
rack?
Side.
Yeah.
So
here we go. So, yeah. So, edit mode, you click here, and you can design whatever you want. So, you have all these different types of knobs. So, let's say I wanted to control, I don't know, something else on here. So, let's grab a green knob and just drag it in. And David's probably cringing because I'm not going to do this as fast or as fluidly as he would. It's like someone.
And then the mapping.
Yeah. So, so I can say, okay, what knob? Now, on this keyboard, I have all kinds of knobs to choose from. So I'll just use this one, and I will hit learn and move that. And now that knob is controlling what? Well, I can have it control whatever I want. Any plugin that's currently loaded. In this case, let's use the Juno 106 again, and then I can control any parameter of it. So, for instance, like let's say LFO rate, and which one did I just use? So that's in there. So I use, what knob did I just use? Does anybody remember? Mm-hmm. Steve? Okay, there we go. So, and I think if I double click this, David, right?
Yep.
But it's a, I applied it to the Juno 106. Yes, I did.
And
so,
getting out of bed mode.
Yeah, so we can see that I'm controlling the LFO rate there, which only has certain settings, so probably a bad example, but that controls that. And then it'll remember that forever. And if I add more synthesizers in, I can abstract, you know, knobs can control whatever I want. So I'm not looking as a performer. I don't have to look at a sea of Juno 106 knobs and a sea of SH-101 knobs. I can look at particularly just the knobs that I want to see. And that makes performance really great. And, you know, from a stage perspective, I can see that. And really, you know, having something like this that is an audio interface, the system, this is my audio interface right now, with just a laptop, I mean, I have a really powerful, amazingly powerful setup. You know, and it can incorporate all kinds of things.
So take it out of edit mode.
Yeah, okay, I will go out of edit mode.
There you go.
All right. There we go.
Cool.
And you can make this look like whatever.
Go one to four rack spaces on these guys,
yeah.
So you can have a really large piece. And again, all of those can be mapped onto your controllers. So, again, a studio configuration tool or a live performance tool.
Yeah, so like here, I don't even have to, the ProMar is a really cool looking synth, but here I've got, and so I know that if I just want to mess with the filter, there it is. If I need to see the ProMars, I can flip it, and there it's connected. This, by the way, the ProMars is interesting. Does anybody have one of these? Probably not. They're really rare. They were made, I think, in 1979. They only made a little bit of them. It was the precursor to the Jupiter 4. It's basically a monophonic dual oscillator version of a Jupiter 4, but they're nearly impossible to find. But that, and the beauty of this is kind of being able to revive and bring back some of these great sounding synthesizers that also look pretty darn cool. And the other thing too is I'll mention that, like on a System 8, the resolution of these knobs is 255 steps, so it's double resolution. And due to the circuit modeling, you don't get the aliasing and kind of stepping and things that you would hear. Everything sounds, you know, just really, really, really smooth. And then just, you know, switching over, if I want to go to the System 100, I literally click there.
And if you held it down, there's a feature.
Persistence, yeah?
That has persistence.
Right? What do you call it, David? What do you...
patch persist, you have to turn it on.
Okay. Well, let's just see what happens if I click. So you...
Go double click.
Yep.
Yeah, turn on patch persist down at the
patch
bottom.
Patch persist.
And hit apply.
And this is
now,
what I did.
Now play and they'll hold it down and now click up another patch. And now play a note with another hand. Yeah, you got the old note. Like, as soon as you let go, the old note will go away.
And then I've got, and then now this is controlling filters for whatever I'm playing, the SH2. Which, by the way, if you listen to like the Stranger Things soundtrack, this is what they used for the bass. I was talking to those guys, they're like, yeah, I love the SH2. This was actually Roland's kind of attempt to make a Moog bass synth, but due to IP and all that kind of stuff. It came out like this, but it ended up being its own really cool synthesizer. These are quite rare too, the SH2. But yeah.
And also, so close that, just the piece, you can put any VST signal processor.
Yep, that's right.
In between.
Which I have none in here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's all fresh. But all of these lines are really flexible.
Yeah, so really cool is like this patch here. So I was able to put the Juno up here because I constrained the, went to the MIDI in, and I could easily set the keyboard split. You can also determine what channels plays, whether it responds to patch changes or not. Another cool thing I love is that these racks can also have a tempo associated with them. Yes, sir.
What are the requirements for the controller?
This controller?
Is it species specific?
No.
I'm using this.
Yeah, this controller. In fact, I should let me clarify this. So.
Is it MIDI? Is it USB?
USB MIDI's MIDI will work.
Yeah, this is using USB MIDI. So you could use any controller or multiple controllers to play the software. So they're fully independent. The System 8 is also independent. You could just take it on stage and play it like this. But when you do connect it to software synthesizers and something like Gig Performer, all of your knobs and sliders can be mapped to anything, and it can also host the Roland plugins itself. So if you had a whole bunch of plugins in Gig Performer, but you wanted to play like the Jupiter 8, which is quite CPU hungry, the hardware could host the Jupiter 8. Or if your computer got lost or crashed or something, you can still play hardware. So the two aren't necessary for each other, but they complement each other really nicely.
In my
student, couldn't run it with an ARP or sequential circuits.
As long as you can spit out MIDI, yeah, you certainly MIDI. Can. Yeah.
So I've got MIDI timepiece AV, and Joe helped me a lot because I had the old parallel port version, and there's a USB version as well, and they have a little Apple Network modem between the two. So I've eBay got a USB version of the MTP AV. This is again from the 90s. Got a cable together, and on my computer, I now have 16 MIDI I/O, which was very happy because I had a synthpop band in '83, actually pre-MIDI, but I have a lot of
who didn't
exactly. Right. I know.
David,
just to, you might have missed a piece. It also supports OSC. You can send OSC, and you can send MIDI over OSC, messages into the SIM as well.
Yeah.
So if you're using apps like Max MSP, which I use a lot with Gig Performer, you can actually send OSC messages to play sounds as well. So
that and there's iPad support, right? iOS support.
That's so you can control OSC.
Yeah.
And so I've got all my MIDI gear that I really haven't been able to use. And this is what I was looking for. I wanted to find a DAW that could instantiate all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I know the things I know about my DAWs, but it just didn't help me.
Yeah.
With this, I see now all of the MIDI ins that are showing. And I can go to have a different rack for each different situation.
I mean, ultimately, all your effects, all your instruments, all your hardware instruments, all your audio and MIDI I/O, all of it, be it disconnected, all shows up in here and lets you route and connect anything to anything.
And save it.
And save it, which is pretty awesome.
I hate to keep interrupting you.
That's,
no.
Given that we're in a guitar store,
yeah.
I should point out that this thing is not just for keyboard players.
That's right.
If you're a guitarist, you can, forget about keyboards and MIDI. Use the audio in, plug your guitar into it, run it through, and there's a variety of VSTs specifically for guitarists. THR is a bunch of plugins.
Yeah,
for instance.
A whole bunch of others.
Here.
But I'm talking about a real guitar.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, oh, come on, it's the same thing.
The point being.
Hang on, I'm trying to go somewhere.
Okay, all right, I'll let you go.
The point is, if you use a real guitar, so using audio in, you can play a chord and switch from one rack space to another, and you'll get instant glitchless switching of your sound to the new sound without any noise or glitches, and you can also have the old sound die away with a similar thing to the persist.
Yeah, which some hardware can't even do.
And you can probably take
loops.
So
it's not just for keyboard players.
Yeah.
In fact, we have front of house engineers who are now using Gig Performer literally to manage both the effects for the live performers and to record the board.
Well, I was going to say, ultimately, it could be for multiple musicians at a time, right? I mean, I could be playing keyboards, and there could be an audio input that's a guitar player is plugging through, and
so
it's a whole environment, really.
Yeah, it's not just a keyboard.
Yeah, that's a good point.
System.
Yeah. Excellent.
General purpose. So let me actually show this. Is here's another IK multimedia instrument that is physically modeled. It's now what have I done here? I've done my guitar rig is what's making it sound.
You made it sound horrible.
Oh, I know. Thank you. So here is a Rickenbacker. Here is it's sounding horrible. So
it's too high.
I think you're right.
No, I mean, I think you have to go down an octave, right?
You don't have to. Oh, you're right. You're right, too. Here we go.
That bass register. And he plays bass.
But usually a real one.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Yeah. My bass is in my case, actually.
Oh, bass players.
Sorry. But what's cool about this particular Moto Bass by IK Multimedia is it's physically modeled. And you can change play style, so whether finger picking with a pick, slap, right, and up, down strokes, let ring, the strings, round, now age, good broken in, old strings, heavy or light gauge strings, it's all nicely modeled, four strings. How would you like a Rickenbacker that has five strings? That would scare me to death. I don't think I want to do that. And the drop D
type
really of thing.
One string.
It, well, it's, you can also change what pickup is in what place. And you can change where they are. So this physically models these things all over the place. It's insanely cool, actually. It's pretty recent. Of a thing, and then what amp you're going to use. So you can take a solid state or a tube amp, and you've got all of this stuff that you would do, and again, save it as a patch.
Can you play it left-handed?
I am, thank you.
You just flip it over.
Because this is a tablet, we know that it actually does invert.
It actually does come upside down.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that right now. And you see that the animation is pretty fun because it actually vibrates stuff.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's pretty cool, let's go back into Be A Bit Punk, thanks. There's all of these. On the models, it has a ton is a technical term here. I think it stopped. I think we had that, the bug happened. But all of these different pieces, I've had an issue. Thank you. Welcome back. So as an instrument, this thing is very cool. And so then when we consider that instrument that could be an actual bass coming in through your audio, can go into guitar rig because I'm taking audio, the blue ones are audio, the orange ones are MIDI. So if I take out the bypass. So now this guitar rig patch is live and I can change as if I would want to, but I can't, And then the other thing that's great, thanks to David again, he pointed this out, there's a thing called M-Recorder. And M-Recorder is a VST recorder that you can put audio into it, you can 2496 recording, you can have multiple instances of it, and you synchronize all instances, so you can hit record, and then you put your water all over the keyboard. Very, very critical. Okay, so now I can go into this. Ow, that really is bright now. And we open AS Work that, and all of a sudden, so who needs a dog? Here we go. It's all that just that easy.
But you know, it really does kind of put the, there's so much lower overhead, I think, in something like this. If you just want to play an instrument, do you need a mixing console and a bunch of recorders and, you know, and DAWs load usually really slowly. And, I think, you know, having something that's so kind of lightweight by comparison, and then it kind of puts the recording in the proper space. You know, it's not starting out as a recorder,
right.
It's ending up as a recorder,
yeah.
Which is kind of the real world way of doing stuff.
I think that's my biggest point that we found out is let's refocus off of the tape recorder That's had enough attention, and let's actually start playing music.
Well, and also, DAWs, any of you who use DAWs, I mean, you kind of know, they seem to have slowed their progress a lot lately, because how many more tracks do you need? How many more channels does it have? How many more, you know, once you can move plugins and have as many of everything as you want, there's not so much more to do. It's little thing, make editing a little tighter, this kind of thing. But it really does kind of ignore the really musical aspects of these things. And performance is more than on stage. Performances happen in the studio, too, which I always remind people. They're thinking live performance. But what do you record in a studio? You record a performance, right? So I think it's just as valid in the studio as any place.
And you can set here. You can set this up.
You can
like
use
that,
David. You can use that.
Yeah. So I'm a mastering engineer.
Is it obvious?
Yeah.
So I'm a mastering engineer. I use a plug-in chain. I master in the box. I've written actually two books. One's Desktop Mastering, one's Beyond Mastering. The Desktop Mastering was a mastering in the box. Now, one of the things that I do is I take records and that I like, and I capture them and master them because I'm special that way. I don't want to hear other people's. You know, I have a whole library of things that I've grabbed. Yeah. One of the things, though, is that you capture it through the audio interface. You go to the wave file, do the mastering thing, and then render it.
You're a content hoarder.
A content horror what?
Hoarder.
A hoarder. Okay.
There are worse things.
Yeah, there's probably
there are way worse things.
I'm a collector.
You get a lot of stuff.
I'm a collector. Anyway, what I found is that I could take the output of my Soda Sapphire turntable into the audio into my same plug-in chain that I would be using alternatively, tune it up, go to MRecorder, and on the first run-through of the record, I now have a mastered version that I just save out and do my sequencing within it, and it's happy.
Yeah.
So that was another tool. It's like a it saved me half the time, really.
Yeah, and I think it helps with some of that option paralysis that you get sometimes when you're just play some instruments and you end up in a DAW. Sometimes you don't need to be in a studio; you just need some instruments to play.
So you want
to? Yes.
Do any questions? Is this all sort of clear? Yes, Marcel.
Latency from the time you hit a key to the time the sound comes out of the speaker.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the audio interface and the computer power. And
you can't be a live musician and go on stage with a system that's going to give you latency that you would notice.
Right. That's why
he's a live musician that goes on stage with this system.
And I think the thing my partner always reminds me, everybody gets really hung up on this latency thing, forgetting that as soon as you stand a few feet away from your speaker, you've got latency.
A few more milliseconds.
Each foot is a millisecond. Each foot is a millisecond.
So, it's low latency if you use decent drivers and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you can use small buffers and so on. But the reality is, this is one of those buzzwords, it's going to be low. Mm-hmm. And everyone forgets. As soon as you're out there,
I still believe that low latency is a benefit. Actually, it's not just, it's not fake.
Because there's going to be other things. But
if you're on an acoustic guitar, for instance,
it gets overthought. Yeah.
If you're on an acoustic guitar and it's about this far away, like 1 foot, you don't want to play the acoustic guitar 30 feet away, and then you get 30 milliseconds of latency, that type of thing.
But there's a point at which, depending on what you're doing, you get below a certain point, it's diminishing return. I mean, if it's 2 milliseconds or 5 milliseconds, it's, for playing, it's...
Yeah, I'm just talking about playability as far as when you're playing a keyboard, for instance, you're playing, you feel the keys, and you don't want to hear the sound come out later than it really should be coming out.
No, it's remarkably good, actually, because it doesn't have...
The responsiveness is what I'm actually...
Yeah, it doesn't have the overhead of a DAW either.
How responsive is the plugin?
So I use in-ears, so I have zero delay essentially, unless you count the speed of light.
Right.
The reality is, if playing the percussive sound, which you'd think, if there was a problem there, we would have an extremely unsuccessful product.
You can see this is,
I'm playing these. If I switch over to the hardware, it basically feels identical. In fact, sometimes I don't even really know what I'm doing. I'm playing the plugin or I'm playing the
I don't know what I'm doing
because
here.
I'm stupid. No, I don't know. But
you're brilliant. Smartest person I know, really.
But yeah, but as long as stuff is, I was started as a classical pianist. So to me, I feel no disconnection or anything with it, as long as it's a decent system.
We have questions. That's great.
So what's a minimum laptop or hardware?
Oh.
It depends on what you're doing. Yeah. it really, for especially these circuit model instruments, the faster the better. They're really hungry. This is like this is what I do my work on, so this is nothing special. And it will, if you get enough plugins, it'll start to fall down. Yeah, it's more spreadsheets than music, unfortunately, which I find myself too much in these days. But it really depends. If you're playing like the D50, you could play a whole bunch of these on a really modest computer. But i7s. Really what you want, probably 16 gig of RAM is what you want. But it really depends on how many things are you stacking. And yeah, David.
So I should make a comment just on that topic. Yeah. So when you load plugins and you've got multiple rack spaces, there's two things you care about. There's basically how much CPU do you need and basically how much memory do you need. And we have two things going on that are very handy. If you look in the top right, you can see the CPU. That's the CPU needed for the actual processing of the audio. It doesn't include the GUI stuff, which you don't really care about. And depending on what plugins are loaded, those numbers can vary widely.
That's right.
And here's the thing. When you switch from one rack space to another, all the other plugins get turned off.
Yeah.
So you're really, now, if the other plugins are not behaving well, some plugins, for example, do GUI stuff when they shouldn't be, you can't do anything about that except beat up the plugin developer. I'm serious.
That's true.
But, from the point of view of the audio processing, when they're not being used, they shouldn't be contributing to the CPU. And most of these plugins won't. So you can switch around, and so you can have lots of things loaded. The other thing we have is this thing called predictive loading. If you've got huge plugins that use a lot of samples, they're using like Omnisphere or Keyscape, and things like that, one of the things you can do is, as you're going down through rack spaces, typically now be in setlist order, in the background, GatePerformer will unload plugins that it's finished with and reuse the space. And so we load upcoming songs in the background so that by the time you get there, they're ready.
Yeah.
So something that might take 20 or 30 gig will basically use 2 or 3.
You can't use do in a DAW. They're just yeah. You have to go.
Yeah, we're not against DAWs. We just figured out.
No, I worked for a DAW company for 10 years.
I couldn't. That somebody asked about one of the requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Again, our main competitor, and I'm not allowed to say the name of it, but it only runs on an Apple. we built this because we got fed up with how that thing didn't perform well.
No.
And that's where this thing came, and it's cross-platform, so it works for both. It'll actually run on Linux, but we don't know how to make money in that world.
Yeah,
so
nobody does.
Yeah, so that's not what it's for.
Yes.
Thank you. Question.
Can you demo the 808 plugin?
Yes, I can, and we'll play that a little bit more later, too. But these are, a few plugins are coming very soon. And one of them is the TR-808. The other will be the TR-909. And this is the first time Roland's ever released an official 808. And this is, again, not they sampled a kick, they sampled a snare. A software 808, yeah, that's a good point. This is a circuit model 808, and we'll play a little bit of it for you.
My wife does not like that cowbell.
All right, let's fix that. We'll go another pattern. Now, interesting thing is you hear these, we kind of enhanced the 808 a little bit. So first of all, I'll just play with a couple of the controls. So you can see like the decay here, which I should set up now. So that's kind of what a lot of 808s sound like. And then, as they, you modded them or turned, you get a lower, right? And then snare, the snappy, it was called snappy. So you can really adjust what you want it to sound like. But one of the cool things is you'll hear that it kind of has these, what they would call like sequencer ratcheting, like I think like Tangerine Dream and people like that would, they would trigger a step multiple times. So it would get, so 16 steps would kind of get these little fast things. Hugely popular for better or for worse in a lot of current music. You get these kind of ratchety, these kinds of things, which couldn't be done on an 808 because it's only 16 steps. So in the plugin, we actually let you expand the sequencer so you can see all of the patterns, all the instrument patterns at one time, and then you can create these sort of like different types of hi-hat sounds. So for instance, if I'm looking at the closed hi-hat, which is right here, so I'm going to pull out, here, let's go, sorry, so pattern E. So you can see these blue notes, right? So this would just be a 16, but you get these little things you hear in a lot of like trap music and stuff like that, or these things called sub-steps, and we let you do that in here. So you can hit type of sub-step, and then if I drop a few of these in, and these kind of little fast hi-hat things are really popular in a lot of modern music. And I, as I said, I listened to that for 3 hours next to me on the plane today. It's great. Yeah.
Has it got MIDI output? If you send that sequencer to...
it should. I mean, you can drag the patterns to tracks and things. Oh, yeah, so they're spitting out MIDI. Also, it has 11 outputs. So, and that's the beautiful thing, like in Gig Performer. So you see the 808, these are all outputs for every single instrument. So I could process these all through different effects, you know, put reverbs on things, distortion on things.
Or separate outputs from your audio interface.
Or separate outputs from your audio, yeah. So that's, you literally go from the plugin and make it like a piece of an 808 hardware where you can run all the outputs
into
different,
jacks in the back.
All the jacks in the back, yeah.
Does it actually have outputs for the Sync 24 clock and start?
I have no idea. Okay. I don't know. I don't.
Which is one of the jacks in the back of the original?
Yeah, no, it's there's certain aspects of it that are kind of limited by the fact that it's a plugin. So people ask about like the sequencer timing and things like that, but it's really kind of locked to the DAW, you know. So
the other question would be about swing. Actually, how does it handle swing?
Like, there is swing, and interestingly, you actually have per instrument swing now, which you didn't have on the original. In fact, the original didn't swing at all. We have a thing called the SBX1, which can actually convert DIN sync, so you can actually swing an 808. But this one has independent swing. So we tried to stay authentic in the sound, but added a few things that we knew people were going to scream about if we didn't do.
When is this going to be released?
This will be out soon.
Like within a month or so?
Maybe. It could be. All maybe right. So, maybe not. Maybe so. I don't know. We'll find out.
What's controlling the tempo? Is that just coming from Gig
Performer? Oh, it's coming from Gig Performer, yeah.
It only has external sync.
It only has external sync, yep. It syncs to whatever the DAW is at. And you can drag drag the patterns out. So it can be, you can tell it to not follow, and it'll just be triggered by whatever MIDI data is. I can also do things like, let's connect it.
Brilliant, yeah.
So if I run the...
If I want to play it, finger drum it, you can do that as well.
And the setup, now check that setup, how difficult it was.
Yeah.
You didn't have to open up anything. You just draw a line, and you're there.
Yeah, and then another cool thing too. So
I'm not paid by either of these companies.
And we'll look at more of the. He's truly not. So I don't know why he does this, but
I want the world to be a better place.
Really special or really special. I don't know. I want to make sure I answer all your questions about the 808. But we can talk more about it.
Sure.
Did you have anything specific you wanted to know more right this minute?
No, I just wanted to see an upcoming plugin.
Okay, well let me show you another one that's going to come out even later. And I love this replace plugin function. This is one of the coolest things because I've got everything racked up. I got it the way I want it. But let's say instead of an 808, I'd like a 909. The 909 will come out shortly afterwards. It looks exactly like a 909. And same thing with this one. Edit mode. I have all the different instruments. I can put in sub steps. I can chain patterns together. you know, and this thing is the sound of, you know, so much electronic music. Yeah.
Is this all internet oriented right now?
No. This is a really good question. What is the cloud in Roland Cloud? People often say, so is like, does it run off the internet or something? So, no. What happens is that the instruments are hosted locally, so they're installed actually on your system. So I could disconnect from the internet, and they would
self-destruct in 30
days. They will self-destruct in less than 30 days, actually. No, they will eventually. About once a week. Is it once a week now, roughly? Around once a week, it needs to be able to connect and say and verify your subscription reoffers. Yeah, but in between that, it doesn't need it. And it doesn't stream its sound from the internet or anything like that. It doesn't need a fast internet connection. But the cool thing is when a new instrument comes out, for instance, when we release the 808, it'll just show up one day. And you'll see it in your cloud manager, and you'll hit install, and it'll be there, and you'll be able to use it. And whenever there's an update, the updates come, and it says, there's an update. You click update. And it updates.
Can you revert?
Can you revert? I don't think you can revert.
In that world, in the plugin world, you do not want to be out in tour again.
But see, that assumes that we would ever make any kind of a mistake.
it's not an automatic update without your agreement. So yeah. If you're on tour, don't change.
No. So what I do is I don't actually have mine automatically update. So that, you know, right before something, so I'm using the versions I know. But you can have them auto update, but I think if you're using it more critically, then you'd probably just want to make sure that, you know. I will say that a lot of these, you know, they're not making a lot of fundamental changes to these particular instruments. I mean, they kind of are, you know, when I get a beta, it's pretty much baked and it works great, and they're kept very simple because they're just recreations of the original things. It's really about the sound quality of them, you know. So, but yeah, I don't know if you can uninstall them. I don't think you can revert back to an older version, right?
Not yet.
He says.
Might be worth thinking about it.
Yeah, I think they're thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So when new modules come out,
yeah.
They're just part of your subscription.
They're part of your subscription. So this is the beautiful thing. So let's say somebody got, you know, I don't try to sell you on it too much, but I will, is that, you know, people who first subscribed, they had some of the anthology instruments. They had, you know, the SH-101, some of the monophonic stuff. And then suddenly one day they got a Juno 106, and then they got a Jupiter 8. And then a little later they got a JV-1080, and then they got a D50. And then they'll get an 808 and a 909 and everything else we release throughout the year in expansion packs and all this stuff. So yeah, it just continues to add, and nothing's taken away, unlike Netflix. So you can still watch ET, no matter when you want to watch ET. Yeah, so it's a pretty cool value. Yeah.
What's the average file size? Just, you know, if I want to download a bunch and go offline.
Yeah, it depends. The circuit model stuff are really small. They're maybe like 13 meg,
yeah,
25 meg,
or so.
Yeah, in the megabytes. Now, some of the anthology instruments, which have a lot of, and the Terra guitar, Terra piano that are larger, might be a gigabyte.
Yeah, one to two gigs.
Yeah, 1 to 2 gigs, yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, it'll do it in the background. You hit install, they run in the background. Yes?
Yeah, so there's a trade-off there. Like, the anthologies are pretty light on performance.
Yep.
But they're larger, and then the ACBs will be a little heavier on performance.
Exactly,
but a lot smaller and less.
Yeah, so you can kind of choose too. I think it's kind of like if you want, you know, you're working in a hotel or on the road, you need a sound of a D50 or something. You can do that if you want. If some exposed, you know, thing in a track that has to be perfect and has to respond organically to knob movements and everything, then you might go with one of the legendary series. But you kind of have a choice. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you can alter and save all your patches.
Yeah.
Anything, so.
Yeah. You can save patches. You can share patches with people. You can, in some cases, you can load SysX from the actual hardware as well. And then, of course, what's cool in Gig Performer is the variations as well. So you can have a rack space that has a certain number of instruments, but then you can make changes, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, but you can make changes to maybe a patch or an alteration of a filter or an LFO and then save that as a variation. So it's the same set, but it's got some changes for patches and things. Yes?
For those of us not entirely sold on the subscription model, are these available for purchase individually? Or?
They're not. But let me offer some consolation, perhaps. what there's a thing called Yours now with Roland Cloud, and what happens is every 12 months of subscription, and even if it's non-contiguous, you could maybe just in the summers, you did it for 3 months, you get to pick one that you can keep forever, even if you cancel your subscription. So by some people, like I kind of look at it, I think, all right, if you want to buy one, think of it as buying pay for a year of Roland Cloud, and you actually it's $17.95 I think a month if you pay for a year, right? So it's like $215. Get your Jupiter 8 or your Juno 106, and in the meantime, use everything else for a year, including all the stuff that comes along and all the updates and everything, and then you could do it again the second year. So in a way, it's the psychology of it, in that you can imagine, okay, I'm buying one, but I'm getting 25 others to play with for a year in the meantime. You know, it's,
yeah, and the way that I looked at it when I saw it originally is, you know how much a Jupiter 8 would cost if I could find one? And now I'm doing an installment plan of $20 a month, essentially. And it's just another one of those bait problems of now I've got $320 subscriptions across my life, and now I can't live. You know, so those are the trade-offs.
Yeah.
But as far as the value of this for me, I'm pretty pleased with the value given.
Yeah.
For what we get, you know, and I'm a Netflix guy too, and Hulu, and a few. I try to stay away from other things.
Yeah,
yeah. It's today's drugs.
Yes.
So is there a Roland Museum anywhere where
it's
all together, and you can?
Oh, like, yes.
Like hear the new stuff against the.
There is a Roland Museum in Hamamatsu, Japan, the R&D Center, and it is everything that you would imagine it would be. It's this white stone building on Lake Hamana, and it's got little portal windows, and you go in, and everyone's in there. Jumpsuits and there is this amazing museum with everything they've ever made, and when you see the GR77, the original guitar, you know, there's the ad that they can no longer have with Jimmy Page sitting with his Les Paul and a TR-808, and because originally that was your for songwriters for drawing. Crazy to think about now, but everything is there, including a big System 700 that's kind of like Mount Rushmore there. Everybody stands in front of it and takes pictures of the lake behind them and the System 700. But yeah, it's whoa, sorry. It really wants to be played. Nothing like 100 BPM dance music. But yeah, it's there, and it's everything you would ever imagine. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah,
so I'm putting on my musician's hat for a moment.
Okay.
My big worry when I tour, and I've had this with a couple of other Macs, actually, my big worry. My touring laptop lives in the case with other stuff.
Yeah.
And it never gets connected to the internet during the tour. Would you consider a model where, as opposed to just stopping working, perhaps you stop allowing the state to be saved, so that at least if it can't connect, you can still use something that's there already. You just don't get to tweak it and edit it. So you could at least keep going.
Yeah.
And not because that's my big worry when I go on the road.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things you could do. You almost wonder too. I literally just thought of this as you were saying this. You almost wonder if there's even like a professional subscription account or something that has some of that built in for maybe for people who don't need it or something. But I mean, I think we'd consider anything.
That's just my musician. That's my big fear, that stuff will stop working. Yep. You get up on stage.
That's right. Yeah.
So let's get into the logistics of the evening. We've got a couple of things which are interesting also.
Surprise. I don't want this feeling to
happen. I know. We'll make it work. We have Scott from Roland Cloud that's going to be, not now necessarily, he's going to show us one of the concerto, the Terra guitar pieces,
Terra guitar.
Which is something I'd like to know about. I don't know enough about it. There's a lot of depth into Roland Cloud that I don't even know that I'd like to. So, because I'm paying for it, so I should know what I get. And just like Netflix, we're not seeing every single thing Netflix has.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go through the entire parallel universes?
It
only takes 2 hours, but you have to be in 17,000 universes. So that's one thing that we're going to do probably maybe after the break.
Yeah.
And then we also have this amazing stuff over here with Jamie, who's not in the room anymore, but with Colin Eisler of Rain, there's new decks. And I don't know how many of you were at the turntable AES meeting we had. The committee was there, but it was amazing. It really taught me a lot. And now, Jamie,
where are you?
You went to the bathroom. See, I'm trying to, yeah, anyway, that's all right. But that might be one of the things that we want to do next, because one of what we can do is we can have Colin explain what the new things are.
Yeah.
Jamie can play them.
Okay.
Then maybe we can take a break and not have cookies, which we usually do, but we're on a diet.
What do you mean, we?
I brought an energy bar we could all split.
Oh, that's true. And then after the break, have Scott show us his stuff.
Yeah.
And then we can maybe play the three of us as a performance.
Yeah, sure.
As a thing. How does that sound to everybody?
Lovely.
Good so far? Awesome. Are you all having fun?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Rock. Jamie.
Hello.
This is Jamie.
Hello.
He's
British.
Colin. Yeah. Let me use this microphone and tell us what we have here.
And all right.
I wish we had a camera.
Yeah, well, everyone will have a chance to come up and take a look at this, and I encourage you to. But so far we've been discussing the virtualization of classic synthesizer instruments, you know, drum synthesizers and keyboard synthesizers. And something that's been happening over the past 15 years in the DJ performance realm is the virtualization of the record control, and they call that DVS. You'll hear that term batted around. That means digital vinyl simulation. So has anyone here heard of Serato or Final Scratch was an early software that was used also. Native Instruments
started his pitch in time, didn't it?
Pitch in time.
Yeah.
Tractor. Tractor, as well as Pioneer's Record Box. But yeah, Serato started with a plugin called Pitch in Time, where they were using DSP to alter the time of a playback signal without changing the pitch of it. You know, normally you slow down a tape or you slow down a record, there's going to be a change in the frequencies. So Serato developed this Pitch in Time plugin, and they were pitching it. Well, they were selling it to Pro Tools users and VST users. And what they started to develop from that was a method through which they could control the playback of an audio signal from a control record. And the big advantage of this from all the digital DJs who were developing sets in the early 2000s was they could then play their music back from a computer but control it traditionally from a turntable. So the original Serato Scratch Live software came out in about 2004, and they used a special control record with a control signal on it to play back any digital file. And there were some unique aspects to the way they processed the forward and backward movement to really imitate the sound that you get from scratching on a record. Because when you're moving a record that fast, the response that you get changes the tone and changes the frequency response of the playback signal. It's not as simple as just moving it backwards and forwards. So, and Scratch DJs themselves rejected this outright at first. Nobody wanted to use it. They thought it was, sacrilegious. But slowly, because of Scratch religious, as the system was proven out and a lot of professional DJs started using it and touring with this, they showed that the response time, the latency, and the processing of moving the track forward and backward really did simulate accurately that sound. So fast forward to today, and one of the newest things that Rain has released is move one step further away from the original turntable analog playback, and we took the tone arm off. And so what this is using is an approach to sending a control signal from the tracking of the movement of the platter and the movement of the record on top of the platter, which is very similar to other DJ controllers that have been out there. Usually the term DVS is used for people who are true Scratch enthusiasts, and then controllers are often used for people who aren't focused as much on scratching itself, and that uses a platter. If you've ever seen a Pioneer CDJ or one of the DJ players that has a spinning platter on top, this uses some of that same principle, but captures that feel of the vinyl and the response that you get from spinning and touching on a real vinyl. I'll let Jamie play a little bit, and you can tell us how accurate, how real does it really feel?
Okay.
Hey, he wants to get his girlfriend. Go get your girlfriend. Hey, and then I'll...
kind of coming back around to the issue of latency that was brought up earlier. In this system, we have... one of the big concerns that still comes up whenever we release a new product in this realm is latency, and how fast can the system respond to what, you know, traditionally were analog faders on an analog mixer and an analog turntable. And here we have a USB MIDI controller that's sending MIDI data based on the turning of the turntable to the software, which is in turn streaming over USB to the mixer, which is reading the crossfader from a little microcontroller in the crossfader, and then processing that and sending it out the speakers. So, and it's still able to retain that same fast cut and that same feel and low latency that is expected.
Can you control other things?
Yes. So the mixer that Jamie's using in the center here is a new Rain mixer specifically for turntablist style DJs, and it includes a lot of features that modern DJs are using now, including Akai style drum pads for mapping to other software you might use in your performance outside of just the digital vinyl simulation software, so that you can incorporate some live production and some other aspects on top of the mixing and scratching of the turntable performance. So the mixer itself is fully MIDI mappable, so that someone who wants to use some video streaming software to synchronize with their scratching and with their performance, that they can run that on the laptop, put that up on the screen, and use MIDI triggers on the mixer to move that, or if they wanted to map the crossfader itself, the MIDI coming off the crossfader to crossfades in the video system, that could also be done. So this is mimicking the feel and the analog performance style from early scratching, but including all sorts of digital tools for adding additional virtual components on top of that. So, and this could be a MIDI source in Gig Performer controlling with pads 808, if you wanted to. So that brings this all together, and this could just be one component in a whole performance that's mapped out in Gig Performer with other plugins living side by side.
And then change it with rack space.
Yeah.
And you're there. Yeah. You want to play again?
Sure.
He wants to play on that. No question.
Can you explain what you're actually doing? I can see hands moving thing. What are you actually
doing? So it wasn't at the meeting.
What I was doing there was basically by moving the record, this vinyl, back and forth at different pitches, controlling the by speeding up and slowing down, that's how you get like the pitch of a sound. And I'm using kind of like a percussive instrument, so I use the crossfader to cut the sound in and out. And I use the up fader to control it in a more sort of delicate fade. So,
And you've chosen here sort of a library of sounds where you know how to manipulate those specific sounds.
Yeah, so like, one of the things I enjoy most about the turntable was taking two copies of the same track and reworking it into a different kind of rhythm. I'll show you.
What do you call that?
Pardon?
What do you call that?
Beat juggling. Yeah. Thanks. We'll be right back. feels so close. It's kind of so accurate. Where just having a turntable with a cartridge on it, you still have that kind of slight analog movement.
Yeah. Yeah, you
get like fluctuation,
warble.
Just from moving, because you're moving
automatically
the record so fast compared to how the cartridge maybe was designed to move.
Yeah, so you kind of, one thing I've realized is I automatically try and adjust for that.
Yeah.
Right? And now I don't kind of have to.
So for that kind of routine, you used to have to buy two of the same records, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
They wear out. Now I've just got a firewall.
And when they wore out, you had to buy another pair or dig in a crate to find it. Yeah. So one of the other things that has happened sort of in the culture of DJing, as some of the management of your set has moved onto the computer, people, you know, there's this thing people refer to as computer face, where a DJ has played a song and they're over on their laptop looking for the next track, and, which older school DJs will say, well, isn't that better than me down here digging in a crate? Which is true, but so one thing we've tried to do over the years, and more DJ controllers and performance tools and instruments are moving the information that's displayed on the computer over onto the performance setup. So either a screen on the controller, or in this case, a screen in the center of the mixer itself. So you're seeing the processed waveform that you're queuing up and everything in the center of the mixer.
Does it look like that up there? Yeah,
so that center of the screen right there is duplicated on the mixer, as well as the list of tracks that you have to select from and your cue points off to the top left and right. That's shown here on the mixer as well, so that you can focus on the instrument in the center of your setup. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm assuming the platters are just controllers. The files are on the computer. You're not spinning vinyl. You're not spinning a CD.
Right. Okay. Correct. So there are other products out there. They've really shifted away from controlling the CD themselves. Most of them just have slots for a USB stick. But there are several that are computer independent. So you would use computer software for managing your library of songs and setting metadata and such, but during the performance it would just play from the player itself. These are not doing that. They're just controlling the software in this case.
Is there any physical marker on the digital vinyl that shows you where 12 o'clock is?
Yeah. So there's a
matches that up there.
Yeah. So exactly, it's going to follow that. What's the term for that, Jamie?
I just call it a marker.
Yeah, just a marker.
So move it, Jamie. Move it so you can see it up here, moving around.
Yeah. So and you can see the on the mixer as well, the cue points that are shown, the little triangles along the track, those show up on the screen as well, so you can see that.
And it's touchscreen, which is super nice.
So on the touchscreen, you can search around through the track. And the waveform, the little strip on the left and right, they call it the overview waveform, is meant to show you you know, the different intensity sections of the song, so you can cue up to it if you don't have a cue point saved already.
Are the markers put in by the software, or do you have to do that as part of your prep?
No, that's part of the prep.
Yeah, they're manually put in. Yeah.
So you find the part of the track that you want to use, and you can use it as a visual reminder of something's going to, an event that's going to happen, so that you can be prepared. Or like the most common way is, you know, all my scratch sounds. I just jump to... Come on! Some beautiful sounds.
Wow. Yeah.
So you can just get to it instantly, and if you're in a routine, you wouldn't need to worry about headphones.
Is that a button? Is that a drum pad that you're tapping?
Yeah. So there are eight drum pads.
Like the Akai.
Yeah.
You can just jump to particular locations.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you set your own. You set your own markers.
Hotkeys.
Yeah.
Something cool. Speaking of hotkeys, is that about these systems that you could do? Is that, you know, you aren't actually limited to stuff that's on vinyl, so you could actually record anything, record your own instruments,
a speech,
or something that night. Actually, go put it in, and you can scratch that stuff, which you can't do.
Exactly.
You
can't do it real time with this one, but there is a record function in Serato. You can pick the mic channel you can record something, right. Go grab the file and load it, and you know, a few seconds later, have that ready to scratch.
Which we do quite a lot.
He's played with Bats Ballard.
Oh, okay.
And so picking up like a guitar or vocal, like any
saxophone, that kind of thing.
And then scratching it back.
Literally have it there straight away on the vinyl to manipulate.
Is that an optical sensor for the determination of the?
I believe
so. It's not that.
The red thing.
No, that's just meant to look like a turntable to show you the speed. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that strobe is just. So part of the idea behind this was to make users of regular turntable feel as comfortable with the controls as possible. Start, stop, motor on, off, and that. So the strobe was there for that. The actual, I believe there's an optical encoder inside this one. Yeah.
Are the right and left symmetrical? Are the two turntables totally identical?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the same. Yeah, they're the same product. Yeah. So, in fact, you can select which deck you're controlling on one of these turntables. So you could perform the whole night with just one. Wouldn't be quite the same. You couldn't do the juggling though.
No, that wouldn't quite work.
Any other questions right now?
Let's do one more performance, and then let's take a break, and then get back in, and we'll set up Scott during the break. Again, is live performance really does rule. It's something that I'd like to see us all get back to, and this is why I'm doing it, like for no money, is I have a desire. I want to see people like you play music live and listen to it. So anyway, is this a good time for a break? There are bathroom back, and we have water hidden under a blanket back there, and you have to fight for them. This is the Mad Max part of our evening.
That's music from Star Trek where they have to pull weapons off the foam walls.
That's right, right. There you go, soundtrack. So let's take 10 minutes since there's no cookies. We're actually going to be quicker turn and get to know each other.